Good evening, everybody. Mike Pelloy here. I want to go right live to MSNBC, to Rachel Maddow's program, about an event that occurred yesterday on the parade route in of a Martin Luther King Day parade in Spokane, Washington. Can you bring up the sound?
Coincidentally, is across the street from our office. But in that case, they did not release the information for several days. They never issued photographs of the device. They did not come out the same level of concern that they did with this device.
Is there any indication that you have now, either positive or negative indication, that law enforcement sources think there's any connection between what appears to be this attempted bombing at the MLK Day parade yesterday and any previous incident?
Well, publicly they're saying no. In fact, Harrell said that they have no linkage to any other incident this time. But it is definitely something they look at. The FBI doesn't do anything without looking at its past.
Thomas Klaus, one last question for you. Has there been significant community response to this in Spokane? Is this, I know you've been reporting for it, reporting on it for the Spokesman Review. Is the community starting to become aware that this happened? Has there been community response thus far? So I'm thinking especially in light of what happened in Tucson.
Absolutely. It's just now beginning to sink in. You know, we get a suspected explosive device alerts a lot, and almost of the time they come out to be a bag with somebody's dirty laundry in it. But in this case, once it was learned that it was a bomb, folks are starting to reflect and look at it, and it obviously is starting to sink in.
Thomas Klaus, reporter for the Spokesman Review, doing some very good, detailed.
All right, what this interview is about, and Rachel Maddow led off with this at the top of her program. Apparently, yesterday in Spokane, Washington, the bomb squad there, or an FBI bomb squad, discovered a suspicious package. It turned out to be a very lethal device that was set on a bench, a metal bench, right along a parade route for Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade. Behind the bench was a brick wall. So had the device been detonated, it would have caused, the blast would have gone outward toward the parade route. And it's clearly an example of domestic terrorism. It is clearly the result of the right-wing hate speech that continues in this country, no matter how many people get blown to pieces or how many people get shot or how many people die. The right wing in this country has simply decided to double down on their rhetoric. They're pushing for this country to explode. Beck, Limbaugh, Hannity, Palin, the Family Research Council, these Christian crazy people. Every single right-wing pundit on television, on radio, that writes in the blogosphere, they are all pushing for an explosion in this country, absolute chaos. And here's one more example of the result of this domestic terrorism being pushed not just by the Murdoch Terrorism Television Network, but by every single mouth on that television network that continues to push this, continues to force people to make these acts of insanity. In the meanwhile, liberals are running around with their hair on fire, demanding that everybody on the left apologize, for telling the goddamn truth. And if you want to see, if you want to know how bad it is, if you happen to watch any of the clips from the Little Parrots program on the Fox Terrorist Network last night, where he interviewed Sarah Palin, if you want to know how bad it is, all right, TVNewsLies.org has this. A suspicious backpack discovered along the route of the Martin Luther King Jr. March in Spokane contained a bomb capable of conflicting or inflicting multiple casualties, the FBI said today. The FBI said the bomb was found about 9:25 a.m. local time on Monday on a bench at the northeast corner of North Washington Street and West Main Avenue in downtown Spokane. A bomb disposal unit neutralized the device, the FBI said in a statement that, quote, the backpack contained a potentially deadly destructive device likely capable of inflicting multiple casualties, end quote. The FBI has refused to discuss how the bomb was constructed. Frank Harrell of the FBI Spokane office told NBC News, quote, suffice it to say it was of grave concern. You could describe it as an improvised destructive device or improvised explosive device, you know, an IED. Area workers initially reported the suspicious package to the Spokane police. The march was slightly rerouted and delayed because of the bomb scare. So, again, the... let me see what else it says here. The FBI has not established an official motive, but the FBI spokesman said the timing and placement of the backpack along the march route is inescapable. At that point, it falls directly, quote, at that point, it falls directly in the realm and sphere of domestic terrorism. Clearly, there was some social or political agenda here, end quote. No threats or warnings were issued before the march. Reward offered. So, thanks, Reg, for sending me that update. I think anyone who harbors any doubts, any normal person that harbors any doubts as to what the right-wing terrorists in this country, the domestic terrorists, are trying to do, should rethink that whole ooh equivalence thing. Ooh. I really think you should. Whether your name is Keith Olbermann or John Stewart or Abe Snake, it doesn't make any difference. You better think that equivalent thing, because there is no such thing going on. Not at all. The political right, the media right, the blogosphere right, all these little dweebs and halfwits who... do this kind of stuff for fun. Are just pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So if the general consensus within the liberal community is that it's time for everybody to apologize to everybody with deep bows and mea culpas and, let's all be nice, you might consider, those who are advocating that, you might consider that the murderous right in this country is no more interested in listening to that than they are listening to anything else that's rational. They have gone over the edge. They're gone. The right-wing pundits in this country have been pushing now for 20 years a steady drumbeat, a steady diet of hate, violence, destruction, kill, shoot, targets. The language has been changed. And these pegs have the audacity, of course they do, to stand around with their thumbs in their butts and say, oh, no, listen, this is just a freedom of speech. We're just talking about freedom of speech here. And it's going to get worse, isn't it? This is the Rupert Murdoch legacy in this country. Here it is. You don't have to wait for it. It's here now. And as far as these evil, evil, evil people on that terrorist network trying to claim no responsibility, listen, you can say that to yourselves and to each other, but the rest of us know what the truth is. We'll be back.
truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This afternoon, I hear the story in Gardena High School in California. A suspect in an apparently accidental shooting at the high school had been taken in custody by police. That was according to footage shared by CNN affiliate KTLA. A spokesman for the LA Unified School District told CNN affiliate KCBS, quote, the student in custody was the student involved in this morning's shooting, end quote. LA Police Deputy Chief Patrick Gannon told reporters that the shooting appeared to be accidental. A student brought the gun to school in a backpack. When the student set the backpack on a desk, the gun discharged, wounding two students. A 15-year-old girl was in critical condition with a head wound. A 15-year-old boy in stable condition with a neck wound. Did you hear about this today on the news? Huh?
We don't need any gun control laws.
Two kids in school, just going to high school, just like the little 9-year-old girl that went to see Representative Giffords. These bastards, I swear to God. Joe Lieberman and Kent Conrad say they're hanging it up, which will make it all that much easier for the psychopaths in the American Nazi Party to gain two more seats. Cy Hirsch. You hear about this? Oh, my God. He was in Qatar, the country Qatar, the capital, I believe, Doha. He was there as a guest on the invitation of Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, which operates a campus in Qatar. And this report came out of foreignpolicy.com today. In a speech billed as a discussion of the Bush and the Obama eras, New York journalist Seymour Hirsch delivered a rambling, conspiracy-laden diatribe expressing his disappointment with President Barack Obama and his dissatisfaction with the direction of U.S. foreign policy. He started out by saying, quote, just when we needed an angry black man, we didn't get one, end quote. And it quickly went downhill from there. Hirsch, of course, whose exposés of gross abuses by members of the U.S. military in Vietnam and Iraq have earned him worldwide fame and high journalistic honors, said he was writing a book on what he calls the Cheney Bush years. And he says he sees little difference between that period and the Obama administration. He said he was keeping a checklist, his word, of aggressive U.S. policies that remained in place, including torture and rendition of suspects to allied countries, which he says is ongoing. He also charged U.S. foreign policy has been hijacked by a cabal of neoconservative, quote, crusaders, end quote, in the former vice president's office, and now in the special operations community. Remember we talked about this, Kathy? Here it is. He said, quote, what I'm really talking about is how 8 or 9 neocon radicals overthrew the American government, took it over. It's not only that the neocons took it over, but how easily they did it, how Congress disappeared, how the press became part of it, and how the public acquiesced. Be careful, Seymour. Keith Olbermann is going to tell you, you got nothing but hate talk going there, buddy. Hirsch then brought up the widespread looting that took place in Baghdad after the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003. He said, quote, in the Cheney shop, the attitude was, what's this? What are they all worried about? The politicians and the press are all worried about some looting? Don't they get it? We're going to change mosques into cathedrals. And when we get all the oil, nobody's going to give a damn. End quote. Quote, that's the attitude, Hirsch continued. We're going to change mosques into cathedrals. That's an attitude that pervades, I'm here to say, a large percentage of the Joint Special Operations Command. JSOC. Yeah. Yeah, that news has been out there for some time. Who else has been talking about it? We have. There's more here. But we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Seymour Hersh, Unleashed. We'll be right back.
If we raise our flag on a million graves, will we all be proud? Or will we be ashamed of our leadership, greedy and arrogant? And we'll all be judged by the choices that we make.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour, Seymour Hersh in Doha, Qatar. He was in that country on Monday at the invitation of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. And he went off and started speaking an awful lot of truth. And it's rippled through certain communities in this country, most of which will try to ignore Seymour Hersh. Anyway, he says the attitude that's prevailing in the Joint Special Operations Command, those are the people who commit extrajudicial acts of execution, assassination. They invade countries that either the Bush or the Obama or the Clinton administration designates as a country that needs to be invaded to make way for gangster capitalism, American style. Hersh maintains that the people who run the JSOC are religious fanatics. He goes on. He alleges that General Stanley McChrystal, who headed JSOC before briefly becoming the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, and his successor, Vice Admiral William McRaven, as well as many within JSOC, quote, are all members or members of, or at least supporters of, the Knights of Malta. Now, Hersh was probably referring to the Sovereign Order of Malta. It's a Roman Catholic organization committed to, quote, the defense of the faith and assistance to the poor and the suffering, end quote, according to its website. Hersh continued, quote, many of them are members of Opus Dei. They do see what they're doing. And this is not an atypical attitude among some military. It's a crusade, literally. They see themselves as the protectors of the Christians. They're protecting them from the Muslims, as in the 13th century, and this is their function, end quote. He went on, quote, they have little insignias, these coins they pass among each other, which are crusader coins. They have insignia that reflect the whole notion that this is a culture war. Right now, there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of anti-Muslim feeling in the military community, end quote. And then Hersh relayed that he had recently spoken with, quote, a man in the intelligence community, somebody in the Joint Special Operations business, about the downfall of Zineb Ben Ali in Tunisia over the past couple of days, and he said, oh my God, he was such a good ally. Well, he also was a dictator. Anyway, Hirsch added later, Tunisia is going to change the game. It's going to scare the hell out of a lot of people. And then moving to Pakistan, where Hirsch noted he had been friendly with Benazir Bhutto, the journalist told of a dinner meeting with Asif Ali Zardari, the late prime minister's husband, in which Hirsch said the Pakistani president was brutally disdainful of his own people. Hirsch described a trip he made to Swat, where the Pakistani military had just dislodged Taliban insurgents who had taken over the valley. Hirsch said he asked Zardari about the tent cities he saw along the road where people were living in harsh, unsanitary conditions. The Pakistani president replied, according to Hirsch, well, quote, well, those people here in Swat, that's what they deserve, because they supported the Taliban. Blah, 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 blah. Journalist Hirsch also alleged that the CIA station chief in Islamabad, Pakistan, who was recently recalled after his name surfaced in Pakistani court documents, had actually been fired for disputing the plans of General David Petraeus, who took over the Afghan war last summer. Hirsch said, quote, when Petraeus issued a very optimistic report about the war in December that he gave to the president, the CIA station chief just declared it was bankrupt. Internally, he just said, this is completely wrongheaded. The policy's wrongheaded. And then off he goes, out he goes. Hirsch said, quote, I've given up being disillusioned about the CIA. They're trained to lie, period. They will lie to their president. They will lie certainly to the Congress, and they will lie to the American people. That's all there is to it. There will be more on this. Now, Jeremy Scahill, who is an American investigative journalist and author, and his work primarily focuses on the use of private military companies. He's the author of the best-selling book, Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. He's also winner of the George Polk Book Award. and our friend Alice got this from Scahill's Twitter feed today. Quote, I have personally seen and held U.S. special ops coins with Crusader Templar imagery. This is not false, as some are alleging. You know, the Knights Templar. How many times have we talked about this, Gammy? How many times? Well, Bernie Sanders tells RawStory.com that Social Security may be on the White House chopping block. Bernie Sanders was expressing deep uneasiness about Barack Obama's non-committal attitude towards staving off cuts to the program, to Social Security. You folks who still believe in the image of Barack Obama might want to start rethinking your position. Bernie Sanders said in an exclusive interview with Raw Story, quote, I have to tell you, I've been on the phone to the very, 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 three of them, highest levels of the Obama administration, and the responses that I'm getting are not assuring. What I'm told is that no definitive decisions have been made on the issue of Social Security, and I expect that is probably true, end quote. Of course, Social Security is referred to as the holy grail of American liberalism. And according to Raw Story, it could fall prey to a bipartisan deal on Capitol Hill. So progressives have launched a campaign to pressure the White House and Congress to oppose cuts, and Sanders has stepped up as their champion in the Senate. He said, quote, what I'm hearing does not reassure me that we have a president who is not prepared to defend the heart and soul of what the Democratic Party has been about since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, end quote. Sanders wrote to Obama urging him to stick by his campaign promise and oppose cuts in Social Security benefits. Sanders cites as one cause for concern the president's decision to appoint two longtime foes of Social Security, Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles, you remember, to co-chair his deficit commission, and they had proposed trimming the program's payouts. Bernie Sanders said Obama could have said that's not on the table. He didn't say that. Much more disconcerting, Sanders said, was the tax deal Obama struck with Senate Republicans last month, which included a one-year, supposedly, cut in the payroll tax, which is the source of Social Security's funding. It was cut from 6.2 to 4.2%. Obama argued the compromise was necessary to prevent a tax hike on middle-class Americans. You know, if you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s, maybe even your 50s, any conversation about Social Security makes your eyes glaze over, right? Hey, man, Jesus Christ, that's 45 years from now for me. I don't have to worry about that, right? Huh? Let me tell you something, Sparky. There's more to Social Security than a retirement insurance program. Much more to it. And if Social Security, if the trust fund, I know the right-wingers tell you the trust fund doesn't exist. Yes, it does. I don't care what anyone to the right of Bernie Sanders says about Social Security. They are either misinformed or lying to you deliberately. But if you're a certain age, seriously, if you're in your 30s or 40s, you couldn't care less about Social Security unless you happen to have a mother or a grandfather who somebody who's on Social Security disability payments, or SSI, or survivor's benefits, or if you have a little niece or nephew whose father was killed in a car wreck someplace, and they are getting Social Security benefits, you see, it does affect you directly, Mr. or Ms. 40-year-old. I'm not trying to get snotty with you here. I'm just saying, a lot of people in their 30s and 40s and even 50s, just it's like I've got children in their 40s and they keep saying to me, that'll never be around when I'm here or when I'm ready for it. Yes, it will, unless we have an administration and a legislative branch that decides to turn this over to these predatory son of a bitches on Wall Street who have been lusting after this like a $10 whore, no offense to Wall Street, since it was put into effect. They want to get their hands on it. They want these thousands of billions of dollars. They want it. They will do anything to get it. Wouldn't it be a mind, or wouldn't it be a terrible thing if the person who unlocked the door to that would be a Democratic president?
Voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Not only the uncertainty here about Obama and Social Security, how about this? Today, now this is the socialist, communist, Nazi, Muslim, Kenyan that these teabag zombies who've had their brains sucked out and spit on the ground insist on calling him. Obama today ordered a review of federal regulations with an eye toward getting rid of those that stifle job creation and hurt economic growth. What? This is Obama's attempt to mend his relationship with the gangster capitalists in the American business community, you know, the big boys. Mr. Obama signed an executive order today telling federal agencies to look for rules that place an unreasonable burden on business. An unreasonable burden? Specifically, Obama said any regulations must reduce uncertainty, be written in plain language, be built upon public participation, and identify, quote, the least burdensome tools, end quote, for achieving the goals of these new government rules. And in an opinion column in the Wall Street Journal, really? Obama said he wants agencies to look for outdated regulations that make the U.S. economy less competitive? Regulations? Can anybody think of one? Now watch all these right-wing cockroaches say, cap and trade! Which isn't really in effect. Obama wrote, quote, it's a review that will help bring order to regulations that have become a patchwork of overlapping rules, the result of tinkering by administrations and legislators of both parties, and the influence of special interests in Washington over decades. Mr. Obama, the only special interests in Washington over decades that have had an effect on rule writing have been gangster capitalists, the energy industry, or am I repeating myself, the NRA, who else? The National Association of Manufacturers, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, all neo-Nazi organizations, neo-fascist organizations. Would Mr. Obama have us believe that some organized labor group pressured the Congress or the White House into rewriting writing legislation that was advantageous to unions? Really? Can you give me an example, Mr. President? Just one with your equivalence issue here. What do you say? What do you say here? The result of tinkering by administrations and legislators of both parties and the influence of special interests in Washington. Oh, my God. The order from Mr. Obama comes, according to the Associated Press, as Republican lawmakers, emboldened by broad victories in the midterm elections, move to scrap many of the administration's programs and regulations, from the Environmental Protection Agency's regulations on greenhouse gases to regulation of the Internet. You see, Representative Daryl Issa, the former lawbreaker, well, you're not former. Once you break the law, you're a lawbreaker. The car thief. Who is also chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Now, he wrote a letter to 150 different trade associations, companies, and right-wing think tanks last month seeking to identify regulations that the capitalists believe hurt job creation. Give me a goddamn break. Job creation? You mean that hurt profits? ISA also named somebody to chair a new subcommittee that will investigate wasteful spending and federal regulations. And in a statement issued today, Mr. ISA said Obama's order, quote, must be an effort that stretches beyond ideological entrenchments to identify the regulatory impediments that have prevented real and sustained job growth in the private sector. He offered to provide Obama guidance. You still want to insist that Barack Obama has anything to do with your ideas or goals, Mr. or Miss Liberal, Mr. or Miss Progressive, Mr. or Miss Real Democrat? You still want to insist on that? You know what that's called? to continue to think the same thing over and over and over again, no matter how much the evidence proves otherwise? Do you know what that's called? Huh? What would you call it, Sparky? All right, we have a break. We'll come back. There's an open letter here to Daryl Issa, first published on the California Labor Federation website. And I'm going to read it to you. Oh, and guess what? Those crazy old Catholics in the Vatican, man, they're at it again. Wait till you hear what they did now. Ooh, buggery, buggery, buggery. We'll be right back. This is the Malloy program. Just looking at this, this item that just floated in here from Rastaman. This is from South Carolina today. A 14-year-old South Carolina boy who received a 22-caliber rifle as a birthday gift from his father back in September took the gun and shot and killed his father today and his great-aunt and wounded his elderly grandmother. The teenager called 911 about midnight last night and told the emergency dispatcher that he had just killed his 44-year-old father, Joe Robert Langford, and his 83-year-old great-aunt, Virginia Dare Gaston. He told the operator he would be waiting for the officers and the gun would be on the dining room table. When officers arrived, the shirtless teenager exited the front door with his hands up. Police entered the home and found the boy's great aunt in a hospital bed in the living room with a gunshot wound to the forehead. The father in his bed with a gunshot wound to the mouth. Both were pronounced dead at the scene. The teenager's 80-year-old grandmother was found with a gunshot wound to the face. She was taken to a local hospital where she's listed in critical condition. As of press time, the boy did not give police his motives for the gruesome killings. Guns don't kill people. 14-year-old boys with birthday presents kill people. Al Babe writes to me, says, I don't get this. Obama is elected fair and square as opposed to the little Bush, and he decides not to investigate any of the obvious war crimes of Cheney and his bantam howdy-doody puppet Bush. And the second, actually much before the second, that the right wing wins the House, they decide to investigate everything Obama. In the meantime, besides investigating Obama and his administration, House leader Daryl Issa has proven that he sides with megacorporations and not the people. Well, of course, Daryl Issa is a fascist or a corporatist or gangster capitalist. All three terms are easily interchangeable. Here's a letter, open letter to Representative Daryl Issa, first published on the California Labor Federation website. Dear Representative Issa, Politico reported today that last month you delivered letters to over 150 corporations, conservative think tanks, and conservative associations or trade associations requesting a list of their least favorite, quote, existing and proposed regulations, end quote, that you, as House Oversight and Government Reform Committee chair, could help eliminate. The article further highlights your appeal for, quote, suggestions on reforming identified regulations in the rulemaking process, end quote. Obviously, there's been a mistake. As I'm sure you're aware, Duke Energy, Toyota, and Bayer, all recipients of your letter, are not residents of California's gorgeous 49th District. Maybe you were thrown by the names of the American Petroleum Institute and the National Petrochemical and Refiners Association, hoping they were consumer-driven nonprofits focused on improving the safety of oil production and transport, assuming you'd like to protect the 49th District's world-class beaches and environmental beauty. Sadly, such is not the case. The corporations that received your letter, those unimaginably wealthy enough to warrant your personal concern, are not who elected you. They're not even what elected you. People elected you, unfortunately, trusting you to elevate their needs over those of Fortune 500 company shareholders. Your constituents selected you as the best candidate to abandon partisan ideology when necessary and move toward a more measured long-term approach to alleviating the current crisis. If nothing else, please let this letter serve as a reminder that distant institutional shareholders are not constituents and corporations are not people. Oh, God. Your letters openly indict regulations and rules as primary forces that stifle job growth, despite evidence that identifies weak consumer demand and a rapidly shrinking uncertain middle class as the chief obstacles to economic recovery. Perhaps you need to be reminded that the regulations you assail have led to safer food and drugs, cleaner air, better working conditions, and more equitable pay. And as far as what created this mess, you'll hopefully agree that derivatives, market excesses on Wall Street, built on a shaky housing bubble, fueled by some subprime mortgage loans, stand as the guilty party. In fact, it was under regulation of the financial sector that's to blame rather than regulation of anything. But as long as you're writing letters to corporate America, maybe it would have made more sense to ask investment bank executives why their multi-million dollar fees and bonuses meant more to them than the economic health and future of our country. It goes on, and it concludes this way. Your letter writing escapade amounts to nothing more than a partisan sideshow. In reality, the workplace safety regulations you demonize don't kill jobs. They keep jobs from killing people. The environmental standards in your crosshairs aren't damaging recovery. They're keeping California a great place to live. You know, as actual residents, we hope you come to your senses and explore more other effective, less ideological driven solutions. If you're interested to hear about some, feel free to drop us a line. We know how much you love writing letters. Signed, California Labor Federation website. I'm not laughing at the Labor Federation. I'm laughing at the futility, the massive, monstrous, monumental Mount Everest of futility in trying to get Daryl Issa, or even considering Daryl Issa, to be a normal human being. He's not. He is a right-wing troll. He is a part of the gangster capitalism class that has decided for sport to destroy the country. Why? Because they can. Because they can. Daryl Issa. Oh, he can't wait. Damn, he just can't wait. Man, I'm going to go after that Negro. I'm going to go after both them Negroes, that one in the White House and that one in the Justice Department. Man, I'm going to blister their asses. Woo! Turn me loose! We want our country back, that's what! That's what I'm here for, boys. I'm here to get our country back from, you know, them. Daryl Issa, car thief, felon, liar, coward, cheat, sneak. He's going to investigate those two black men. Yes, he is. I got my subpoena power here, and I got my gavel here. They shouldn't be hiring aides over there in the White House, Justice Department. They better be hiring lawyers, a lot of them, too. Hot damn. Let me get this started, boys. Woo! I'm Daryl Issa. Some of you sons of bitches may call me a car thief, and maybe I am, but I tell you what. I'm going to get our country back from them.
Before we get to fun and frivolity in the highest levels of the Catholic Church, you probably know by now that the FCC today administered its blessing on the merger of Comcast, the largest cable and residential internet provider, and NBC Universal. And that socialist Kenyan Justice Department is expected to follow suit right away, removing the last obstacle to this unprecedented consolidation of media and internet power in the hands of one company. Dear God. Josh Silver, writing at SaveTheInternet.com, says you should be afraid and mad as hell. The new Comcast will control an obscene number of media outlets, including the NBC broadcast network, numerous cable channels, two dozen local NBC and Telemundo stations, movie studios, online video portals, and the physical network that distributes that media content to millions of Americans through internet and cable connections. Uh-huh. Culmination of the deal, combined with the FCC's recent loophole-ridden net neutrality rule, sets the table for Comcast to turn the internet into cable television, where it has the ability to speed up its content, slow down its content, or block its competitors like Netflix, and hike the rates for its programming and services. So everybody ends up paying more, whether you're a Comcast subscriber or not. This is how gangster capitalism works. This is how it works. And all you little dumbass right-wing Republicans out there, another example of company pulling itself up by its bootstraps, right? This merger squeezes what's left of independent, diverse voices from the television dial. And once again, another one of President Barack Obama's promises to rein in runaway media consolidation in the crapper. Here's a quote for you. It's a candidate in June of 2008. Mr. Obama said, quote, "I strongly favor diversity of ownership of outlets and protection against the excessive concentration of power in the hands of any one corporation, interest, or small group. I strongly believe that all citizens should be able to receive information from the broadest range of sources," end quote. So where's that Obama today? Well, he's on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. As I mentioned, announcing an executive order that will, quote, "make sure we avoid excessive, inconsistent, and redundant regulations." This president's list of massive compromises to corporate lobbyists is just stunning. Remember now, as Josh Silver points out, this is the same Obama who promised to take a back seat to no one on net neutrality. It's the same Obama who promised to provide the public option on health care. It's the same Obama that promised to end the massive bonuses to the Wall Street titans. The list of broken promises from this president is unending, isn't it? And yet some of you out there still believe that this president, this Democrat in name only, is going to turn things around for the working class, the middle class, the hard workers, the small businesses, the manufacturing base. The what's Mr. Obama doing tonight? Isn't he at a state dinner for the people to whom the United States of America now pays rent? The Chinese? Don't they own us? Don't they own everything that we are, we have, and will ever have? And aren't they sitting down having a nice dinner tonight and a nice chat? In the same 2008 interview about media consolidation, Obama said, quote, "There is a clear need in this country for the reinvigoration of antitrust enforcement, to step up review of merger activity, and take effective action to stop or restructure those mergers that are likely to harm consumer welfare." So much for that one, too, right? President O, huh? Oh, my God. Josh Silver says, "Obama is being squeezed by a corrupt Washington that is run by industry lobbyists, fake grassroots groups, massive political spending, and PR machines that make the most basic public interest protection impossible. But rather than tell that story and dig in and fight like a true leader would, Obama has chosen to hire corporate-friendly advisors, compromise on the most crucial substance, attempt to eke out weak, symbolic half-victories, gift-wrapped in flowery oratory and spin. It's a losing strategy that has become brutally transparent." Amen and amen.
I had no choice.
before the hour. All right, just from the great beyond. There's so much more to the story about the merger of Comcast and NBC Universal, and you really should check it out. Go to savetheinternet.com, savetheinternet.com, and look for this article by Josh Silver. That's all. Savetheinternet.com. And the article's by Josh Silver. It was just put up today about this merger. It does mean something to you. It really does. And I'd like to get into it, but you can check it out yourself. Before I get to the the buggery thuggery in the upper echelons of the Roman Church, you know, the same organization that the Joint Special Operations Command in the U.S. military swears their allegiance to. Before I get to that, Prairie 2 wrote something the other day, and I never got to it. And I kind of like this. This is different from his usual stuff. Listen up, okay? January 11th this year, Defense Secretary Robert Gates met Hu Jintao in Beijing for talks on increased transparency about China's military modernization drive. Earlier that same day, you remember you read this in the news, China's new fifth-generation stealth fighter plane, the J-20, took its first test flight. This was apparently unbeknownst to China's civilian leaders, who appeared genuinely surprised when Gates asked them about it. The U.S. was aware that China was secretly developing a new fighter, but thought it was a decade away until photos of it doing high-speed taxi text surfaced in mid-December. The usual skeptics claimed it was just a mock-up and couldn't fly, or at best a flight test, based on U.S. standards, was still 2 years away. Reality proved different. The J-20 is similar to the U.S. F-22 in its stealth characteristics, but is much bigger, doubtless faster, and with much more range and payload capacity. Now the skeptics are saying the Chinese won't have suitable engines for many years. That's probably not a good bet, especially considering that the Russians have engines that would work and could use some part of China's mountain of money. Flash forward to the not-too-distant future. After China moves to seize the rebel province, quote, of Taiwan, and they chose to resist, the right-wing president of the United States sent in the fleet, despite the resignation of the Navy admiral and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The president believes the godless commie Chinese will back down with a show of God's good right fist. The USS Gerald Ford, the first of a new generation of aircraft carriers, lies off the Taiwan Strait, burning out of control and near sinking. The death toll is unknown, but could run over 4,000, including lost escort ships. Shore-launched Dongfeng 21D ballistic missiles destroyed the task force in a matter of seconds, unopposed. 200 miles away, the USS Ronald Reagan turned to run, but took a direct hit to the aft bomb locker and disappeared in a flash of light. At the same time, the Air Force major and the lead tanker of a group is about to rendezvous with a task force of 100 planes headed toward Taiwan. He monitors a transmission coming from the AWACS plane supervising the area, but it goes suddenly dead. He reflectively glances over at his fighter escorts just in time to see the closest one explode and fall away. Just then, there's a violent lurch as Major's port engine explodes, taking much of that wing off the tanker, but he isn't aware of it as chunks of wing have cut through the cockpit. The lead fighters of the task force jettison their bombs and go to full throttle in an attempt to run down the long-range Chinese fighters speeding away. The U.S. planes will run out of fuel in 2 minutes at that setting, but it doesn't matter. They don't have enough range to reach land, and the tankers are gone. The remaining pilots have no choice but to eject when the fuel runs out and hope for pickup, but their satellite uplinks have gone dead, and even the GPS has failed.
It's the GPS satellites that relay distress beacons as well as provide guidance for the advanced U.S. weapons systems. But they orbit at low altitude, and China has taken them out. Back in the U.S., the president is hopping mad. The lights have gone out, and his interview for Fox News is being delayed. But the lights have gone out everywhere. The red phone rings. An aide picks it up, and the line goes dead. The call was to tell the president that the world has changed. PrairieNumeral2.com. Go to his website, and you can read that a little bit later tonight, just before you go to sleep. Oh, Jesus God. But there's a way to avoid all that. And I think the gangster capitalists have explained to President Obama exactly what he is to do tonight and tomorrow. Tonight, I think, is the official banquet, right? The remember when Hu Jintao came during the Bush administration, they wouldn't have lunch together. They wouldn't even invite him to lunch. And what's this? John Boehner was invited, number three in line for the U.S. presidency. If something untoward should happen, the president and vice president, John Boehner, would step right in there and become our first orange president. But Boehner declined. He said he has a previous engagement at some bar, I guess, or a massage parlor, or wherever he goes to relieve his tensions. But to refuse the two most powerful people on earth, number one, Hu Jintao, and number two, Barack Obama. Maybe Boehner just doesn't like the way their names sound. They both sound so goddamn foreign, don't they? Hu Jintao, Barack Obama. So Boehner sent his regrets. No, I'm sorry. I don't want to go. I'm sorry. I can't. Oh, Jesus Christ. You think it was something like that? Probably. Oh, and speaking of Ohio, John Kasich, the new neo-Nazi governor of that state, did you hear the latest? Just got an email from somebody who lives there. I don't mean to say somebody. It's not very nice. Where is it? Oh, it's from Buckeye Girl. There you go. That would be Janine in Youngstown. And she says, she writes, Teabagger John Kasich is showing his, quote, support, end quote, for Martin Luther King Jr. and civil rights by proposing that MLK Day be moved from the third Monday in January to March 17th. That's St. Patrick's Day. Buckeye Girl writes, my mouth dropped to the ground when I saw that, because it's such a ridiculous proposal. He obviously believes that more importance should be placed on those who honor St. Patrick by drinking themselves into a stupor before celebrating civil rights accomplishments. As far as I'm concerned, Buckeye Girl writes, it's nothing more than a first step in showing disdain for and bulldozing of civil rights accomplishments and those who fought alongside Martin Luther King to gain civil rights for the African-American community and other minorities in this country. What a way to celebrate MLK Day, by drinking green beer, wearing beer goggles, and singing Irish songs. Is that for real? Is that for real? John Casey, remember that bastard? Remember that one time I was on Fox all those years ago? It was on Valentine's Day, wasn't it? Huh? And that slimy bastard, and who else? Hugh Hewitt? Was it you? That was back when Kasich had a program on Fox. From the heartland. Remember that? From the heartland. And now, by God, he's the governor of Ohio.
Let's take a break. Time for a break. Can we take a break? Jesus, God. I swear to God, tonight of all nights, I just feel like I need a shower after talking about this crap. And the third hour here is going to be, I'm going to have to revisit Dick Cheney. Oh, boy. So you right-wing turds out there, get your digital recorders ready. Come on, I want to see this all over the right-wing blogosphere tomorrow, what I got to say next hour. Come on, get your ass in gear. You only got about 20 minutes here.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
For the hour. According to the New York Times, a newly disclosed document reveals that Vatican officials instructed the bishops of Ireland in 1997 that they must not adopt a policy of reporting priests who were raping children to the police or to civil authorities. The document appears to contradict Vatican claims that the hierarchy in Rome never determined the actions of local bishops in abuse cases, and that the church did not impede criminal investigations of accused child abusers. No! I swear on a stack of, well, Bibles. Abuse victims in Ireland and the United States quickly proclaimed the document to be a, quote, smoking gun, end quote, that would serve as important evidence in lawsuits against the Vatican. Boy, it just never stops. The gift that just keeps on giving, right? Huh? The Vatican? Can you still hear the lambs, Clarice? The document, a two-page letter, was first revealed by the Irish broadcaster RTE and obtained by the Associated Press. At least some version of the letter has been published on various sites around the Internet. The letter was written just after a first wave of scandal over sexual abuse by priests in Irish Catholic schools and other facilities, a scandal that brought down the Irish government. In 1997, an advisory committee of Irish bishops had drawn up a new policy that included mandatory reporting of suspected abusers to civil authorities. The letter, signed by the late Archbishop Luciano Storaro, the Vatican's apostolic nuncio, or chief representative in Ireland, warned the Irish bishops against implementing the reporting policy. No, 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 1,000 times. How many times I have to tell you, you Irishers, no, 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 no. It is God's will these children be raped.
Ooh.
The letter, signed by Luciano Storaro, said that for both moral and canonical reasons, the bishops must handle all accusations through internet church channel or internal church channels. Bishops who disobeyed, Luciano wrote, may face repercussions when their abuse cases were heard in Rome.
The letter, signed by Luciano Serrero, said, quote, the results could be highly embarrassing and detrimental to those same diocesan authorities, end quote. In other words, blackmail. The Church of Jesus Christ. Listen to this. Listen to this. Huh? A Vatican spokesman, the Reverend Federico Lombardi, said he had not seen the letter but confirmed its existence. He said that it represented an approach to sex abuse cases shaped by a particular Vatican office, the Congregation for the Clergy, before 2001. In that year, Pope John Paul II charged the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that's the old Inquisition office, then led by the future Pope Benedict, with handling such cases. Father Lombardi said, it refers to a situation that we've now moved beyond. That approach has been surpassed, including its ideas about collaborating with civil authorities. I mean, my goodness, it's not new. They've known about
now
it.
Now that you've selected.
They've known about it in Ireland for some time. It's not a smoking gun. Who's that? Well, who says smoking gun? Who says that? Somebody in Tucson? You people ought to take care of your own business over there in the United States and leave the child rape stuff to us. We've had 2,000 years to practice. Astonishing. Just astonishing. The Catholic Church hierarchy lies. They lied. Do they really? Oh, my God. I thought that stopped with Torquemada. You will love the Lord. You are a Jew. You are a Muslim. You will love the Lord. Torquemada. So the Catholic Church, now it turns out, not only have they been lying through their teeth and other parts of their anatomy, but they also instructed the church hierarchy in Ireland to lie. And that if the church hierarchy in Ireland did not lie, did not follow the dictates of the most powerful church of St. Peter, then those Catholic, or I should say those Irish bishops, would be brought to Rome and be done with. My God. Okay. We'll save some of that for another time. Coming back after this break. Dick Cheney wants a heart. Dick Cheney wants a heart. And if Dick Cheney wants a heart, we'll be right back.
7 past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Gwenna Wyszynski. Her message, happy birthday, Joe, and many, many more. Gwenna Wyszynski, happy birthday to Joe and many, many more. Thanks, Gwenna, for the sponsorship. Orwell, a lot of people have read more of George Orwell than just Animal Farm and 1984. He was a prolific essayist, of course. From the 1946 essay, In Front of Your Nose, this sentence: we are capable of believing things which we know to be untrue, and then when we are finally proved wrong, impudently twisting the facts so as to show that we were right. Intellectually, it is possible to carry on this process for an indefinite time. The only check on it is that sooner or later a false belief bumps up against solid reality, usually on a battlefield. George Orwell. Two sentences, okay. Thanks for the Orwell quote, James. Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, it's amazing to me how media in this country finds such scum noteworthy, newsworthy, whether it is Sarah Palin or Dick Cheney. Cheney is arguably responsible for, well, let's say he's in the 20th century, Dick Cheney's probably in the top 20, maybe even higher, of people on this planet who have caused mega death, displacement, destruction, chaos. Cheney's right up there with Kissinger. And yet, American media pays attention to this war criminal as though he had something important to say. The only important thing Cheney has left to say in his miserable life is either guilty or not guilty, Your Honor. And then let the trial begin or the sentencing phase commence. Cheney is by definition a war criminal. The Nazi hunters spent decades tracking people like Dick Cheney down all over the planet after World War II. They wouldn't stop. There's still Nazi hunting activity going on. Somewhere. Tonight. Somewhere on planet Earth, right? And here's Dick Cheney, a guy who is now unable to travel to certain countries. A guy who has the audacity to sit for an interview and to talk to his interviewer as though he were an important figure, a political figure, someone with something to say. But as long as media treat him that way, as long as you find NBC, what was it that the man I deeply respect, Keith Olbermann, said the other night when he was going down his list of people who should apologize because violence has no place in the American political system? Same network, Keith. NBC treats this mass killer, this war criminal, like a rock star. Got any comments about this one, Keith? No, I don't think so. I think the person handling the interview probably outranked you at NBC. Which is okay. I'm not, I don't have any
big-ass attitude about Keith Olbermann. I really don't. I love his program. I still do. I hope he goes on forever. It's just that Keith has, I guess, become very much accustomed to now of the big paycheck and the fine suits and the staff of writers and producers and so on and so forth, that he apparently either is playing a joke on everybody by making ironic statements such as violence has no place in the American political system, and there, immediately after making that statement, scolding people whom he thinks has injected violence into the political rhetoric of this country. I'll take you serious on that one, Keith, when you go after this monster Dick Cheney. But anyway, there he is on NBC News. His first interview since his heart surgery in July, and looking like the ghost of bloodshed past, predicting Barack Obama will be a one-term president. In part, Cheney says, because of the health care insurance overhaul that Obama pushed. Of course, Cheney doesn't have to worry about that, does he? No, Cheney has the best health insurance on earth, thanks to you. You, that's right, thanks to you and me. Doesn't make any difference our political point of view. Dick Cheney's health insurance is paid for, plus, out of my pocket and your pocket. Hey, you teabag bastards, what about that? Huh? Do you like paying for someone else's health insurance? I thought that's what all your signs said, right? Why should I pay for someone? I pulled myself up with my bootstraps or my jock straps or something. You're paying for Dick Cheney. And if Dick Cheney decides at some point, you know, he said in the interview, well, I'm not sure if I want a heart or not. Science and technology is to the point where, you know, I can live with this, it feels like the engine of a goddamn 1956 V8 Ford in my chest, but, you know, it's all right. I don't care. I never used my heart anyway. Is it a pump, right? That made a difference to me. But the time may come, and it may come rather rapidly, where I'm going to decide that, yes, indeed, I do want a new heart. And at that point, I'll just I'll let my people know, and they will go get one for me. It's a very simple process. I think about all the hearts that I've blown into red mist all over the planet. And what a waste. Oh, my God. If I should have had somebody there scooping a couple of them up and putting them in a refrigerated box or something and, held for me. But I may decide I want a heart at the present time. As a matter of fact, I'm getting kind of used to wearing these straps around my chest. They're very snug. They feel like restraints, as a matter of fact. And I'm familiar with restraints. As a matter of fact, I kind of like restraints. Depends on what part of the body they're applied, but these around my chest aren't all that bad. As a matter of fact, they can't be pleasurable. I don't know. Can I say that in this interview? I realize it's NBC, but so if I ever want a heart, I don't think there'll be any debate whatsoever. I will. I'll get my heart. You can bet your ass on that one.
Yeah.
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour, you know, you may come to the conclusion from listening to this program that I don't like Dick Cheney. I really don't. That's because, you know, he has been a factor in the destruction of this country since the 60s, since the late 60s. I started to think at some point, maybe it was in the 70s, that he and Henry Kissinger were in a foot race to see who could develop the biggest body count of people around the globe. That's one thing about the United States. I guess it makes us not unique in the pantheon of nations that have produced mass killers. The people that we have produced who never wore a uniform of the United States but engineered killing and destruction and death of hundreds and then thousands and then hundreds of thousands and then literally millions of people around the globe, in all corners of the globe. That list of Americans who have done that, Not to guarantee safety and security and freedom and justice and peace in the United States, which is the cover behind which they always hide, but rather to forward the nasty bloodlust of gangster capitalism all over the planet. I mean, just look south. You don't have to go far. Look south. Look to Central America. Look to South America. Hell, look to Mexico. But when you take a look at South America, Chile is a perfect example. A democratically elected president, Salvador Allende, a socialist, an honest-to-God socialist, first time in the Western Hemisphere, a socialist, freely elected. How long did it take Nixon and Kissinger to murder him? How long? It just goes on and on. So here we have Dick Cheney. I mean, isn't nature telling Dick Cheney, look, you've done enough damage. You really have. You've ended enough lives, men, women, children, old people, young people. Your foreign policies have been so destructive, so murderous. It's time to go, Dick. But he doesn't. He says he was not troubled by depictions of him as, quote, tough, mean, and nasty, end quote, during his 8 years as a vice president. He said, quote, you're at war. I wasn't running for anything. I was there to do a job, end quote. And the irony escapes him. Of course he was there to do a job. He was there to perpetuate the killing, the destruction, the disruption, the destabilization. That's exactly why he was there. Now, if you can think way, way back to 1999, 1998, way back. Oh, my God, that is so last century, Malloy. You're really asking us to reach way back. Remember when Dick Cheney appointed himself, or somebody appointed him, to go find the inestimable George W. Bush a running mate? Do you remember that? Do you remember Dick Cheney, a one-man selection committee? He was going to find somebody to run for Mr. Nice Guy, the guy you'd really like to sit down and have a beer with, that owner of the Texas Rangers, that governor of the state of Texas, good old George W. Bush. Yeah, there we go. And who did Cheney come up with after a talent search that would have beggared something on American Idol, right? But there's Dick Cheney at the end of the big search. Well, I think I've chosen me. Why is that, Dick? Well, it's pretty apparent that George W. Bush is a dumbass and very easily manipulable, even more so than Nixon. Nixon had that Quaker streak in him, but George has none of that. George is a drunk, and it's going to be very easy to handle him. So I've decided to, if you will, appoint myself. So I am, and I mean that literally, because when this campaign is over and we lose the election, I will be appointed vice president, and I'll have to drag this dumbass with me, but if you will. Anyway, that's the way it works. That's the way it works, Dick. We'll be right back.
It's a fact that's...
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gwenna Wyszynski, who has a message. Happy birthday, Joe, and many, many more. Well, there you go, Joe. And thank you, Gwenna. Yes?
Joe shares a birthday with someone else.
Who would that be? Oh, my God, it's you. Oh, I forgot again. Oh, no.
It's okay. Molly remembered.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I come across a dispatch from the front lines that is unnerving. Because it is so deranged. And the perpetrator lies and lies and lies to try to get out of it. I'll tell you what, before we do that, though, you want to play that song? All right, we need a little musical interlude here. This is, call it Divine Inspiration from the Heartland. There is a video that goes with this audio. And if you could see the man and the woman who are about to sing this song for you, you would understand the, I don't know, some implications. I'm sure you've probably already seen it. I'm sure it's out on YouTube with about 30 million hits. But anyway, here it is.
She's a cool blast from Alaska. In grain with common sense, she's not a Harvard lawyer, but she knew what the founders meant. A cold blast from the north that freezes Congress in their tracks. With God and the Tea Party, she's gonna take it back.
All right, all together.
Say Sarah Palin, she won't listen to their bunk. Say.
Absolute madness. You talk about bookends. You got Dick Cheney over here starting to rub his knuckles together, worried about a heart. Oh, I can get a heart. Over here, you have Sarah Palin. I have an idea. I have an idea. Sarah Palin gave up her position as the governor of the great state of Alaska so that she could... All those things she said she wanted to do. Well, Dick Cheney is a better man than Sarah Palin will ever want to be. So, Sarah, why not make the ultimate sacrifice for the good of your country? Dick Cheney needs a heart. He doesn't want Sean Hannity's. Glenn Beck's is too tiny to fit into a big old chest cavity inside Dick. But I'll tell you what, Sarah. I'll tell you what. It would be just a wonderful thing if you could step up and put a notice on your Facebook page that you're going to donate your heart to Dick Cheney. Now, I think that would just be a damn fine thing for you to do, girl. Bring up that chorus again. Bring it up.
Congress in their tracks with God and the Tea Party. She's going to take it back.
Here we go.
Sarah, Dick Cheney needs a heart. You got one. One and one equals, well, you know. The second thought, no, don't do that. Don't do that, Sarah, because you're just a freak. You're just looking for your 15 minutes of fame and your $80, $90, $100 million. That's the American way, sweetheart. No problem there. But our Dick Cheney, if he gets a new heart, will be capable of another 15 or 20 years of mass killing. So you just keep yours, Sarah. The story, it comes from NBC News, of all places, but... Even a stop clock is right twice a day, right? Isn't that how that expression goes? One of the nation's biggest banks, JPMorgan Chase, admits it has overcharged thousands of military families for their mortgages, including troops, families of troops fighting in Afghanistan. How about that? The bank also tells NBC News that it improperly foreclosed on military families. Oh, really? Just a little oversight there, right? J.P. Morgan Chase, just a little oversight, right? You know, back in the 1880s, 1890s, when Mr. J.P. Morgan himself, when the country was in another horrible situation, J.P. Morgan got his friends across the big pond to bail out the U.S. government. J.P. Morgan has always been there for the betterment of the United States of America. But these admissions are an outgrowth of a lawsuit filed by Marine Captain Jonathan Rawls. Rawls is the backseat pilot of a 18 Delta fighter jet and served the nation as a Marine for 5 years. He and his wife, Julia, say they have been battling Chase almost that long. The dispute apparently caused the bank to review its handling of all mortgages involving active duty military personnel under a law known as the Service Members Relief, Civil Relief Act. Active duty troops generally get their mortgage interest rates lowered to 6%. 6%? My God, you can get a mortgage for 3.5%. Oh, well. And are protected from foreclosure. J.P. Morgan Chase now appears to have repeatedly violated that law, which is designed to protect troops and their families from financial stress while they're out there working for the betterment of J.P. Morgan Chase around the globe. But they don't care. These are bankers. These are parasites. These are the type of scum that, as long as they exist, will seek to destroy and undermine everything decent that still might exist inside a human mind. Chase official told NBC News that some 4,000 troops may have been overcharged. As far as the homes foreclosed on military families, well, that was just a bookkeeping error. We're really sorry. We really didn't mean anything by it. More to this when we come back.
With a woman's eyes, I can feel you watching in the night. All alone with me, I'm waiting for the sunlight. When I feel cold.
Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Gwenna Wyszynski, whose message, Happy Birthday, Joe, and many, many more. Thanks, Gwenna, and Happy Birthday, Joe, from us also.
Especially from me.
Especially from your co-birthday girl here, Kathy.
Happy Birthday, Joe.
A J.P. Morgan Chase official told NBC News that thousands of troops have been overcharged. Their statement from the chief communications officer, Kristen Lemkow, said, quote, "We are deeply appreciative of those who fight to protect our country, and Chase funds a number of programs that provide benefits to military personnel and veterans. And while any customer mistake is regrettable, we feel particularly badly about the mistakes we made here." End quote. She added that beginning this week, J.P. Morgan Chase will be mailing a total of about, oh my gosh, $2 million. That's what they make in about 40 seconds with their scams and their ripoffs. In refunds to families that may have been overcharged. She says most of the families improperly foreclosed on have gotten or will get their homes back. What about the extra stress? Hey, Kristen, what about all the agony you put these people through? Do you have a way of restoring their emotional balance? Huh? Oh, we're so sorry. Mistakes happen. It was inadvertent, not malicious. J.P. Morgan Chase, as of September, has $2.1 trillion. That's $2,000 billion in assets. They're second only to Bank of America, another predatory gangster capitalist thug operation. Bank of America has $2.34 trillion, which is also $2,000 billion and change. Julia Rolls, who filed the lawsuit, she and her husband, against these predators, said, quote, "It's been a nightmare. It's been a living nightmare." The story began in 2006 when her husband went on active duty. Under the law, Lieutenant Rolls could get his, or Captain Rolls could get his mortgage interest rate, which was adjustable and rising, down to 6%. Chase took a few months to lower the Rolls rate, overcharging the family, Rolls says, by as much as $900 a month. In the fall of 2006, Chase finally began charging Rolls the correct 6%. For the next year or so, everything went relatively smoothly. And then 2 years ago, the Rolls family says, J.P. Morgan Chase began hitting them with collection calls that escalated to sometimes three a day, claiming they owed as much as $15,000. Julia said, quote, "Saturdays, Sundays, middle of the night, it did not matter if it was a holiday, collection calls at 3 a.m. The caller would state, my husband would state, I'm in California. I'm stationed here in Miramar. It's 3 a.m. Why are you calling me? And the answer, well, sir, this is an attempt to collect a debt. Julia Rolls said they threatened to take the house and report the family to a credit agency, even though the Rolls family didn't owe the bank anything and never missed a payment. Fed up, Captain Rolls got a lawyer and sued J.P. Morgan Chase for himself and other members of the military. The lawsuit is still pending. The bank maintains that it previously refunded the initial overcharges to the Rolls family. The Rolls say, no, you haven't. And the spokeswoman for J.P. Morgan Chase, Miss Kristen says, we made mistakes here, and we are fixing them. We now have a dedicated team in place devoted to servicing home loans for military personnel. The members of our military deserve nothing less. We welcome the opportunity to talk to Captain Rolls and others who would like to discuss their accounts. Gangster capitalism. Captain Rolls, a Marine Delta fighter, backseat pilot, Delta fighter jet, out there blasting and shooting and bombing and strafing to make sure that the Chi-Coms are paying attention as the next great confrontation begins to unfold, the one for the 21st century, between the dying United States and the rising Chinese Empire. So there is Captain Rolls out there every day risking his life for companies like J.P. Morgan Chase. And how do they pay him back? They call him at 3 o'clock in the morning and demand money that he doesn't owe. Gangster capitalism is as gangster capitalism does. I'll see you tomorrow night.
Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.